Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Town Talk powered in part this morning by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, visit TourStaffordVA.com. TourStaffordVA.com. John Hennessy, the chief historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park, with us this morning. John, good morning. Good to have you here.
Ted, it's always exciting to be in the presence of a radio legend.
And even when it's by phone, I'm sure it's that.
Even by phone, yes. We've never done this before.
No,
by phone.
I've not done this with a lot of people. That's what in the last couple of months we have done. Boy, this is you and I always get together this time of year, and usually right before Memorial Day. But this show will be much different than we usually talk about. I guess right off the top, we need to mention that. For those who really make the luminaria on Saturday night something that they look forward to and take family and friends to, that just like everything else has become a casualty of the virus right now.
Right, I do think that while we're very sad that that's happened, you know, in the big scheme of things and all the things that people are losing and struggling with, the loss of that is. It's important, but there are other things going on out there, and getting anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 to 9,000 people together on a Saturday night is not advised these days. So we will not be doing the illumination of the National Cemetery. Our staff, in fact, tomorrow will be getting together to place the flags in the National Cemetery. That's usually a job done by school children locally. But at least we will have that where the flags will appear on that hillside. And that by itself is always a pretty impressive thing.
Oh, it is. It is. I did not realize that. So that will be a nice thing. I was thinking today, knowing you and I were going to talk, that last year the program just got started and it was just a ferocious storm moved through. And the year before it was kind of a late start because of the weather. I just thought, boy, I hope next year that we have a nice night, a nice clear night, and we can celebrate some normalcy. Memorial Day in Fredericksburg, a very unique time, and it will be much different this year at all sites that remember Memorial Day.
Yeah, you know, everything that's being done is being done virtually. The sentiment is there, I think, but physical aspects will be completely different. You know, Memorial Day in Fredericksburg, you know, there's a handful of days every year that are kind of uniquely or interestingly Fredericksburg. I think the battle anniversary weekend when HFFI does its historic house tours, candlelight tour, and Memorial Day weekend are really days of history in this community, more so, I think, than any others. And so to have this day pass off without that is unusual. But, you know, then we've seen Easter pass. We've seen lots of things pass without their normal notice. So, you know, being a historian, it's very interesting to watch and listen to how people react to this. And, of course, it's a unique experience for us. But there's all sorts of similarities between, you know, the reaction here in this community to this pandemic, you know, for example, to the 1918 flu pandemic, which was the last pandemic that came through this part of the world of any magnitude that had a huge effect here. Lots of similarities.
Boy, and you look back at that, and you read some of the articles, you see how people dealt with it, and it's eerily similar at times. And I guess in a lot of ways that gives you hope that you see that this is for a time, and whenever that time lifts, and it will, we will move on from this.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking through my stuff yesterday, and the Freelance, the local newspaper at the time, the predecessor or half the predecessor of the Freelance Star, carried a piece on October 1918 citing some messages that had come in from King George that complained of the action of the health authorities in closing the schools and churches during the prevailing epidemic of influenza. And so this is not this controversy over this, you know, kind of tug and pull back and forth is, you know, it's just endemic to a situation like this. And you know what? We ought to all want to reopen. And you know what? We also all want to keep people as safe as we can. So there is historic precedent in this tension, this debate that goes on today, went on in our community at that time as well.
It'll be interesting when you go back to having the type of programs that we're all used to, various programs, because I over the years, I know you've done programs and made mention of during the Civil War, a lot of times soldiers in close quarters in viruses would come up in impact. And whoever thought about that? Next time, I mean, that will become something, I think, when you tell those stories, everyone will have a point of reference and be able to relate a little bit to it.
Yeah, I mean, during the Civil War, one of the just hard realities of a war beginning in the mid-19th century was the passage of epidemic illnesses through the armies, through the community. You know, in the Confederate Army, the Southern Army set up special camps where new regiments, that is, soldiers from across the South, where they had enlisted, you know, because remember, in 1861, you know, a lot of these people, not all of them, but a lot of them were coming from very remote areas that had really never been, some of them, touched by the sorts of germs that are so common in our society today, like measles. The Confederate Army set up camps specifically for regiments to be sent so they could get the measles and get, you know, the herd immunity from measles. Now, of course, you know, the price for that is that some people got very sick and some people died from that. But there was no other remedy for an epidemic at that time that other than herd immunity. And so the Army recognized that. Very early, and especially in the Southern Army, there were any number of regiments that just suffered just waves and waves of contagious illnesses like that. Fredericksburg itself, I would argue, the greatest human disaster in Fredericksburg's history was an epidemic of scarlet fever that struck Fredericksburg late in 1861. And into 1862, over that first winter of the war. And now, scarlet fever is a particularly awful illness, and it took a tremendous toll among young people, almost exclusively children. And as many as 100, we don't know the exact number. I've got the names of, I think, 58 or 60, but as many as 100 children died during the scarlet fever epidemic. And if you walk through the town cemetery or the Confederate cemetery at the end of Amelia Street, their graves are scattered through that cemetery. Just a crushingly sad event. And remember, at the time, the population of Fredericksburg was only about 5,000 or so. So that's as many as 100 children dying in the span of about 3 or 4 months from that epidemic of scarlet fever. So we have seen this before. Of course, the big difference between 1918 and now, and certainly the scarlet fever epidemic, are the treatments and the health. You know, we can now treat pneumonia that follows flu. And in 1918, 1919, they couldn't do that. So, but even then, Fredericksburg, you know, people ask me about the flu pandemic of 1917-18, and as of October of that year, which was just after about the time that they started to reopen the churches and the schools, well over 1,000 people within the community had the flu. So considering the population of the town was, I think, about 7,000, 7,500, at the time, a huge percentage. Now, the pandemic would continue into the following year, so there were still illness present. But at that time, at the peak, right as World War I was ending, there had been about, well over 1,000 cases. But fortunately for Fredericksburg, I say this only, and I mean that only in a statistical sense, of course. The newspaper reported that by that time, only 40 or 50 local residents had died from the flu. So it did not have the catastrophically fatal effects here on a widespread basis that it did on other communities, like Philadelphia, for example, which suffered terribly from the flu pandemic, largely because they held a parade right as the they held a war bonds parade right as the pandemic was beginning to reach the city, and that was you talk about a super spreader event. A quarter of a million people on the streets of Philadelphia led to just widespread illness in that city. But you know, at that time, the communities across the country took many of the same steps that we've taken today, including the requirement in some instances of wearing masks, which at that time prompted the exact same sort of protests that it does today. People don't like to wear masks, and if you make them wear it, they're gonna complain about that. But history there are lots of threads that travel through time that are common from generation to generation, and we can certainly see that. Now, I think maybe the big impact here that was not as measurable in 1918 is, of course, the economic impact. Yeah. And we'll be dealing with that for years down the road here.
Yeah. It is interesting, though, just the historical background to see it and understand, like you say, that so many of the reactions, this isn't the first time in all generations do have it. It's a great background. John Hennessy here, the chief historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. We will continue. We'll be right back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Got a question for today's guest? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
John Hennessy with us this morning, the chief historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. As you mentioned just before the break, John, just about the economic impact, and we see that all around. You also see it, and you look at a lot of the nonprofits. You look at a lot of the museums that are so vibrant in this community, and just not having them available right now is just it's a difficult time. But boy, the nonprofit, the museum world, these are really tough times.
Yeah, it's a constant reminder to me and the folks who work for the National Park Service how fortunate we are. We are not worried for our survival, but lots of nonprofits and small organizations, especially in the tourism industry, certainly need to be thinking in those terms and are thinking in those terms. You know, it's easy to think about a nonprofit as something else, but, you know, they're businesses.
Yeah.
And if they're not run well, they will not survive. And, we've all done stuff to help local businesses. You know, I know in our house, we occasionally order takeout just so that we can, help the restaurants in town and that sort of thing. But, you know, the nonprofits are significant employers, you know, places like George Washington Foundation at Kenmore and Ferry Farm and Stafford. These places are all trying to make their way through this whole thing. But I keep finding that people don't think of them quite as they do, you know, the businesses downtown. And it's true they don't necessarily, they don't generate meals taxes, at least not directly, but they attract the people who do.
Yeah.
And they employ people who live down the street from you. And so They're all working really hard to find their way through this, whatever means they can. And, you know, and there's some very talented people who manage these sites and these entities and you know, but for all of them to come out on the other side, it's going to need everybody. They're going to need everybody's help to do that. So as you kind of cast your eyes over the landscape, not just history nonprofits, but all nonprofits. I mean, you know, after the 2008 collapse or crash or Great Recession, you know, it took nonprofits years because people, of course, because they didn't have money, stopped giving.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just important to think about those people as well. And, you know, they're all, I know each of them working on a plan for kind of restarting and to do it safely. That's the big thing, because, you know, our employees are just as fearful as a lot of other people are about. I'm just as fearful as a lot of other people about, you know, being exposed to this virus. So we just got to proceed very carefully and thoughtfully. And but we all can do things to help each other. And I've certainly seen a lot of that as this whole thing has unfolded.
Well, we certainly have, because I was going to say, I'm glad you took that route you just took, because I was going to say that in the early days of this, there was such an emphasis on whether it was restaurants or just small businesses. But I think you're right. The next focus really does need to be some of these nonprofits and some of these museums. To make sure that when we do come out on the other side, that they're here, because they play such an important role in the overall economy of this community.
You know, you look at entities like the George Washington Heritage Museums in downtown, you know, Rising Sun, Mary Washington House. You look at Kenmore and Ferry Farm, the George Washington Foundation. These are organizations that have been here literally for generations.
Yeah.
And so they not only are, you know, there are places and entities in our community that stitch us together today and across time. There are places of constancy that help give this community its identity. And, you know, those places, the Fredericksburg Area Museum, the Belmont and the James Monroe Museum, which is run by the university, these are all places that really are part of the identity of this community. And so they're all working hard to make it through this. I am acutely aware that they suffer and confront vulnerabilities that we in the National Park Service don't in terms of our existence. And so whatever any of us as members of this community can do to help them, or be it, you know, and any of the other nonprofits that work in this community. And there are some tremendous nonprofits doing humanitarian work. And, you know, just don't forget that they are businesses too. Not only do they serve people, but they employ people. And, you know, so whatever we can do to help on those accounts, you know, I hope that all of us as members of this community will do.
And I think we're all gonna feel it this summer, whether it's, you know, whether it's the concerts that the museum has or the programs that the Fredericksburg Area Museum has. I think about 4th of July and just a little program out where, you know, the reading of the Declaration of Independence that gets done downtown. And just a number of those things, where, you know, Ferry Farm on 4th of July, and a lot of these things that will not have the same impact. We've talked about things that we've lost, you know, since Easter, and that's going to continue. And you do want to make sure that all that is there once we're ready to get going again.
Well, I guess the only thing that you can say about all that is that we all hope that once those entities get back up and running, once the park starts doing programming again, and once the fireworks start flying over Pratt Park again, that people will appreciate all the more that the work that these entities these organizations have done in this community over the decades and even generations.
John Hennessy with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park here this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's got to be different for you guys. I have not seen you since we did a show early part of the year, but just the normal kind of shows that we do, especially based around some of the May battles in this area that didn't happen this year, and history at sunset and different things like that. I miss seeing you and your in the other historians doing your thing.
Well, I miss seeing them too. we see each other on Zoom a couple times a week, and our staff is working very hard from home. The history staff, at least, we have employees in the park also working, trying to keep things tidy and neat and safe for people. But, you know, we face a great challenge. We went through a tumultuous, felt tumultuous, it wasn't, but certainly an intense process to reduce our operations in the face of the pandemic. But now, you know, the job of restarting operations in the face of the pandemic hopefully the waning pandemic, we shall see. It's a much more complicated task, and we're in the middle of that now. And so that's what's keeping us busy right now, is figuring out what is this new world that we're entering going to look like for visitors to a national park area, for our staff, all of those things. Those are big questions, complicated questions, and we're working hard on those.
We'll talk about that when we come back. John Hennessy here, the chief historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:30.
Okay, listen, we got to talk about something.
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Miss an episode of Town Talk? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Music. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
John Hennessy here this morning, the chief historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. You mentioned before we took the break just about a little bit about the Park Service. How has the Park Service been dealing with all of this? I can still go and walk around a battlefield, and what's available right now?
Right. So, contrary to popular belief, the park has never closed. The landscapes, you know, we manage over 8,000 acres of land, trails, roads, some of the prettiest places in the region, in fact, and none of those have closed. What has closed is our buildings, and I think for obvious reasons. But I think the parks and the battlefields have become really a refuge for many people during this whole thing. We have seen just steady, constant use of our trails and our resources. In fact, on some weekends, we get a little bit overwhelmed. We haven't had the same sorts of overcrowding issues that some of the big icon parks have, like Shenandoah and Yosemite, which did actually close their landscapes because they had so many people coming that they just couldn't manage them. We didn't have to do that, fortunately. And generally speaking, people have been very good about, distancing. I mean, we see, of course, some things, but carrying things in, carrying things out. You know, there's no restrooms, there's no trash cans. So people have been very good, and I think that we don't have people coming from distance as we normally do to see these places for the one and only time in their lives. That hasn't been happening much lately. These places are still getting tremendous use from the local community, and really kind of highlights their dual value as both historic resources and this kind of open space in a suburban world that has tremendous value to the community in which the park resides. And that's true for almost every NPS unit that has any kind of land base at all. They are valued for their national significance and also valued because they're rare and precious open space. And this is a time, I think, that for a lot of people, that value of open space is preeminent, and they've been using the park.
Well, and I know a lot of times when in the past, especially the past month or so, when a lot of people, especially with people I know with kids, have talked about needing ideas. I've always said, you know, pick a battlefield, go and walk around it, read the markers, and everything is right there, and you'll be surprised at what's here. And you know, who knows, in the future you may be getting future visitors and future people who come to programs just because they've got the time now, and they can they go and see something and get an interest in history.
Right. And you know, we see that. Our obvious hope is that there is something in the experience that each person has that inspires them to come back again when things return somewhat to normal. We've seen very heavy use, for example, at Chatham, and which is, of course, overlooking Fredericksburg from Stafford County, right along the river. And it's a beautiful place and really has become a refuge for many, many, many people. And the gardens are beautiful. We still have, our operations during this time have been really considerably reduced because most of our staff has been working from home. And that's been very successful. But we have deployed some of our maintenance staff and a few of our volunteers to work on key landscapes that are just preeminently important and would suffer damage if they're not maintained. And so, you know, the gardens at Chatham, for example, we still have a crew of volunteers, master gardeners, friends of Chatham, who come out every week to work in the gardens. And those gardens are about to bust out in their late spring color. We're in that little lull right now, but they're about to bust out. And, you know, we've had staff working in the National Cemetery to keep that place tidy and neat, and but just our key landscapes. But, you know, the Park Service from the very first day has stated that our first job in the pandemic is to assist in preventing the spread of the illness and to do whatever is necessary at a local level to contribute to that effort. So, you know, that's why you haven't seen a kind of uniform peanut butter approach across the country with respect to national park areas. Our operations are more than anything else. They're governed by a number of things. CDC guidelines, obviously, but that's kind of a granular sort of thing, the 6-foot separation, all of that sort of stuff. But our operations are really governed by the conditions in Virginia and the prevailing orders in Virginia, and specifically in the community where we're working. So, you know, right now we are in sync with the phases that the Commonwealth has outlined. We are in our phase one, which coincides with the state's phase one of reopen Virginia. And, you know, when the Commonwealth moves to phase two, so will we, and that will imply some changes for what we do and an expansion of what we do on the ground, as long as the virus cooperates with that. You know, the virus could mess us up any day, any time, any place, and we're acutely aware of that. But we are right now busy trying to map a path forward into a pretty uncertain world, but we're looking forward to when Virginia goes to phase two. Our buildings are not going to reopen, but we will have people on the landscape. So, and why will our buildings not open? Very few of our, in fact, are, it's almost impossible for example, Chatham or the Jackson Test Site or the Fredericksburg Visitor Center to have any number of people coming through that space and be able to guarantee the distancing that is required. And so until we get either develop strategies where that can be done or the distancing requirements are lifted or changed, which is probably the more likely outcome, we will be this summer. In fact, we're going to call it a season on the landscape. Our staff will be working on the landscape at all of our sites. And for the most part, our buildings will not be open to the public just because we can't do it safely and in accordance with the CDC guidelines.
Interesting. That will be interesting. But I knowing you and your staff, you'll come up with some ideas and you'll make it work.
Well, you know, for me, I've been in this business a while, long time, and it's very interesting to me. In fact, all of us who work in this field, what will be the permanent changes brought about to our business, our industry, our tourism industry, our visitor services by this pandemic? You know, what will people not be willing to do going forward that in the past they gave no thought to at all? For example, in a museum, you know, museums have for years emphasized what in the business is called interactive exhibits, hands-on exhibits. Hands-on exhibits are, now, we're not doing hands-on exhibits now. In fact, one of the first things we did before we began to restrain operations was take all our interactive exhibits out of our visitor centers. So, you know, things like pushing buttons and, you know, building models and things like that, you know, how long will it be before we can do that, have those exhibits active again, and how long will it be before visitors are comfortable laying their hands on things like that? I mean, we're all so trained now. It's funny, you watch TV. I suspect you have the same mm-hmm. thing. You watch TV and something that was filmed in, you know, January of 2020 and appears on TV now, it might as well be from the 1950s because everybody's hugging each other and shaking hands and slapping each other in the back. And it's like, oh, that was an old, that was a era ago, wasn't it? And so we just don't know what the outcome of this will be and what the expectations. But I do know, you know, that for us who are in this business of trying to connect people and help people understand these landscapes, understand the people who trod these landscapes, who lived in these landscapes, you know, this change, while it certainly is going to be disruptive for visitors, you know, Park Service visits are often very predictable. You know, people come in, they want to know where the bathroom is. Well, we're not going to have bathrooms for a lot of the summer in some of our sites because we can't do that safely. They ask where the bathroom is, then they get a map and some orientation information. They go through the exhibits, they watch the film, and then they go out and take a walking tour or something of that sort. Major parts of that are just not going to happen. We're not going to be able to show our films in our auditoriums. Our buildings are not going to be open. So that's different. But it also gives us an opportunity to do some different things on the landscape. So we're going to have a stronger presence of living history on our landscapes this summer, and which I think our staff is excited to do. We've got a group of, you know, assuming everything goes as we project with the virus, and again, all of this could come off the rails, you know, in an hour with a major outbreak someplace in our community. But if everything goes as planned, you know, we're going to have a group of really talented interns coming in. Our seasonal employees are coming in, and they're going to be charged with going about our business in a different way. All our orientation will be outside under shelters. We're going to have a lot of staff roaming the landscape, interacting with visitors at a distance, of course, but not giving, at least not at the beginning, any kind of formal tours. Eventually, we might get to those. But we're going to see. I mean, first off, the limits on group gatherings need to be something other than over 10 because have a Park Service person in uniform, and chances are they're going to attract more than 10 people just standing out there.
Yeah.
So we've got to be careful about that. And so we're just going to try some different things and see how visitors react. We're hopeful, and I think we're confident that visitors will cooperate with the distancing requirements, you know, between family groups or individuals. But we're going to kind of build as we go. And so, you know, we're going to take small steps here first. Hopefully, you know, whenever we transition to phase two, we'll be ready to go. And then when we get to phase three, we'll look at other options and other opportunities. But if I was coming in here as a young person this year, I'd be excited because we're going to be trying some different things, doing some different things. And a visit is going to look very different. Now, there is a downside. And the downside is that because our staff is going to be outside every day, that presents its own set of challenges. I mean, you know what being outside in July and August in Virginia is like.
It's hot.
It's a relentless, pounding experience. So hours at some of our sites will be constrained to 4 or 5 hours a day out of respect of our staff. Our visitor centers will probably operate at 8 hours a day from the outdoors, but some of our other sites will be. Chatham will probably be staffed 5 hours a day, I would guess, not on the inside, but on the outside, but with a couple of people around the landscape to help visitors as they go. But we also have to have the ability, if someone runs into trouble or if there's weather coming, we're going to shut things down pretty quickly. Because we want our people to be safe and we want our visitors to be safe. So it's going to be a much more dynamic, less static summertime at the park this year. But I'm excited to see what our staff can do. We have some tremendously talented people. And they always, as you know,
yep,
come up with something.
It is. It will be exciting. And one of the things to remember, I know at the beginning of this, a number of downtown businesses said to me, be patient with us as we do this. And I think that's the key here. Be patient with people.
Yes. And we would ask that of us as well. And we also reciprocate that because we know it's a different experience than people are going to be expecting. So we'll all kind of work through this whole thing together and take baby steps deliver a product that is stimulating and safe. And I can't say the safe part enough because we have to worry about visitors and our staff.
Yep.
We don't want to put our staff in jeopardy.
Yep. Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. John Hennessy here, the Chief Historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. We will conclude when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
John Hennessy here, the Chief Historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. Again, before we run out of time here, there is no... everything, though, you will have things on Facebook this weekend and some virtual things, but all the things we've come to expect for the holidays around here with anything will not be taking place this weekend.
Right. We have a couple of relatively new staff members who are particularly talented in interpretive media and video and things like that. So if you haven't checked our Facebook page recently, you'll see a really kind of uptick in the quality of stuff that they are putting out. Our staff has put out a number of things for this weekend. We'll be deploying or putting out a special Memorial Day video that really just captures the reflections of our staff, many of whom are veterans, and that should be good. But you know what? Memorial Day is I guess we always need a prompt, but Memorial Day really exists inside ourselves and our own reflections on what the sacrifice of these people who gave their lives for our country means. And so, you know, everybody just find that little prompt and spend a few minutes on Monday or every day thinking about what all that means. And because really it does live in our hearts and souls and is not a, it is more than any other holiday, it is something that that starts from the inside out rather than the outside in.
We've only got a couple of minutes left. You and I talk hockey a lot. What do you think the future of hockey holds? I think we are dealing with borders and countries, and it will be interesting to see what the NHL does going forward.
Well, I know that you know, surveying the wreckage of the pandemic in America, the only bright spot for you is that your horrid Red Wings will not have to suffer the indignity of going back and finishing a horrid season. When was the last time they had a season as bad as this?
It was not maybe
1950s,
never.
Probably.
Yeah, exactly. So I was happy to see it end. But
It'll be, you know, all of our sports things, everything. Is it, setting aside the fact that this is a horrific humanitarian disaster, watching our society maneuver its way through this is very interesting. And sports, yes, that's very interesting. But also our everyday people, our neighbors. And that's where we can help, of course. And we can't do anything about the NHL. We'll just kind of, you and I will plan on getting together to celebrate the Penguins Stanley Cup when that comes here in a few months, I suspect. But other than that, my energies are going to be pretty much focused on the local community and our neighbors who need help and need support and need encouragement and need to know that that we all care about each other here.
It is. It's a unique community here, and we do. We especially we've seen it this spring in this with what's happened in the city. And you had a great reminder at the beginning to talk about the nonprofits and just the history around here in the museums that are all closed. Don't forget them. We've talked in the past about becoming a member and helping them that way. And even though you might not be getting much from your membership right now, keep it up. And when there are giving days and things like that, get involved that way.
Yeah. And, there are other things that matter. And one of them is Ted Schubel. I always kid you about being a radio legend. But you are an integral part of this community and the spirit of this community. And so all my kidding aside, you are a local treasure and radio legend.
Thank you, John Hennessy. We'll see you soon. Thanks.
News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.